guys, and welcome to another installment of Professional Goblins. I'm Scott Gladstein. With me here today is my co-host,
Mike Mallor.
And we have the amazing, stupendous, fantastic Liz Course with us today. How are you, Kit? How are you, Liz?
I'm doing pretty good.
Fantastic to hear. So, Mike is back from New Zealand. Savannah filled in last week. By the way, Mike, we have dubbed the show from last week the Unprofessional Goblin Gremlin Podcast.
You
told us not to break anything, so I intentionally broke something on screen. It was not very impressive.
Sounds like you guys made a cheap knockoff of our podcast.
Yeah, pretty much. Because we were neither professional on it, nor were we really goblin-y.
I'm sure it'll be good. I'll give it a watch. I still am jet-lagged and have not been here in the country for more than 24 hours. So.
Fantastic.
Or in Pittsburgh, anyway. In Pittsburgh, it's been 8 hours for me.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I am fresh off a trip from New Zealand because I got offered a job there.
Oh, you did?
And I will be moving. Yes.
Awesome, man.
Yeah, in about 6 to 9 months, my output is going to cut down significantly because I will have a salaried 8-to-5 job halfway across the world. So.
Wow.
Yes, I'm super excited. I cannot talk about it very much yet because of reasons. But everything's the concrete's drying. Getting the work visa worked out.
So, Mike, real quick, just tilt your camera. You're a little like off the screen to your right. There you go.
Okay.
So yeah, Mike is back. Thank you, Savannah, if you're watching this for last week. That was a lot of fun to mess around with you.
Thank you, Savannah.
Savannah. There was also artwork, Mike, of the Plane of Evil. I will just say that, and you'll have to look for Deanna's artwork of it. Today we do not have a product we're reviewing. I spoke with Deanna, she's an artist, she wasn't super like, you need to review my paintings or something. Plus I'm not sure how qualified I am to do that as I hired her for most of her artwork. Liz, not that you know anything about that, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
So that means, if you guys are first time watching, we have a scripted show. We first start off with a product review generally, but today we're not. Then we're going to go talk about our favorite character, or a character or from a game we're playing, or a character we learned something from in the past. Then we're going to talk about the favorite project that we're working on currently. Then one that is not ours. Followed by some Pathfinder, Starfinder news, some D&D 5e stuff, some other RPG news, then we talk about Kickstarters, and then Liz gets to gab as much as she wants at us as long as it's within time frame.
Woohoo!
That's going to be the best part, I think.
I will blather a lot.
That is awesome. Speaking of blathering, do you want to start us off then? Do you have a favorite character that you learned a lesson from, or one from a game you're currently playing? Like, does that be a character you played even from a game you're currently in? Just one that you're just like, oh my god.
Right now I am playing a Bard Blood Rager in Curse the Crimson Throne.
Nice.
She is a half-orc. Both of her parents were half-orc that fled from the Hold of Velston and settled in Corvosa. And she decided to, being a bard, she decided to be an entertainer and try to get catch the eye of a patron of the court and whatnot. Things didn't turn out because it is Curse of the Crimson Throne.
Of course, as that tends to happen.
As plans to happen. I'm thoroughly enjoying that character. The character's name is Bronca.
Bronca?
Bronca, which I named after the character from Dragon Age.
Nice.
The big fan of the series. And my GM is Blake Davis. He runs the Archives of Nephis site.
Oh, cool. I love that site.
Oh, yeah.
He's the GM, and I play with his wife, Katina, who works at Paizo, and also with my partner and his husband, Christelph and Alex.
Nice.
We have an Oread, a rat folk, and an elf in the party. So
the elf is just like, guys, I thought we were doing basic races. What happened?
Well, no, he's playing an elven cleric of Abadar, and he just picked up the Exalted class Abadar. Yeah. And the rat folk is the alchemist, and there's the Oread brawler, so...
You know, I always felt like the Brawler was the kind of required rebuild that the Fighters should have got early on.
I'm finding it's a bit much more kind of down and dirty monk, actually, is how I tend to look at it.
Well, no, I totally agree. It's one of those things where it's like, Brawler to me feels like it's a lot more interesting, especially with the swappable feet mm-hmm. mechanic. And like, mm-hmm. you can do so much more with it. You can do like the down and dirty, like beat your face in Brawler. You can do mm-hmm. the kind of more like, you know, the roguish mercenary, the fencer, the wrestler, the
right.
fighter, the anything.
Now that we have somebody that's been in the wheelhouse, I want to know, was anybody like, is this like Pathfinder 0.5 in office when they were making that book?
I have no insight to the creative decisions because I work in operations, not the creative side of it.
All right. I'm just saying, you know, coffee, people talking around water coolers. You don't have water coolers there, I know, but.
Actually, we do.
Where were they?
They were downstairs. There is a water cooler.
I was just so starstruck. I must not have seen it.
Well, to be fair, there's probably a lot of other shiny things to look at.
There were a lot more shiny things to look at. It's true. It's true.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, right now my favorite character is Chanka, Bard Bloodrager, with the Abyssal Bloodline, because that fits in.
Ah, Demon Dirge. That sounds cool. I'm getting into that.
Yeah.
It sounds... Oh, I don't know. Have they started the second season of Harmon Quest yet? Because it sounds like something the Lady Barbarian could totally go after.
I don't know, actually.
All right. Well, for those of you who don't know what Harmon Quest is, it's freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
They play Pathfinder like on stage in front of an audience and bring in different comedians every episode. What's the mm-hmm. first one was the dapper guy. What's his name? He's a major comedian. Oh, god damn it.
Yeah, that doesn't really narrow it down.
Nope.
Yeah. It's not Patton Oswalt. It's a dude who's always got like tweed suits, like, you know, funny suits on and bow ties. He does a drink show on YouTube. I'm gonna look it up.
Does he do it's not like Adam Conover, right?
Mm-hmm.
Adam ruins everything.
He's in the Paul F. Tompkins, that's what it is. Paul F. Tompkins. I can't believe it was.
There we go.
Yeah. No, it was. I watched the first season. It was pretty excellent. I look forward to season two. But
so, Mike, right. What do you got for a character?
You know, I was out of the country in New Zealand for 2 weeks. But in the meanwhile, they continued the Shadow of the Demon Lord game where I've been playing Fringe.
Yeah.
I've talked about Fringe before. She's an amnesiac changeling thief with an obsession over chicken huts. So much so that, like, instead of using her racial abilities like I'm supposed to, she managed to copy a witch that owned a chicken hut, and she just refuses to give up the witch's guise until she gets the chicken hut. So we've been going through all these situations where the GM has been, like, trying to get me to do it, and I'm like, no. I'll go into the ecclesiarchy dressed as the witch. It's fine. I'm sure nothing wrong will happen. And so they continued a little bit while I was out, and in the meanwhile, she got her chicken hut.
Fantastic.
Like she finally has it, and I don't know if it's gonna like eat her at an inopportune moment or whatever, but I can't wait to see what I do with that chicken hut. Like, I think I'm gonna make some kind of like refuse catapult.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it's gonna be good. And there's only a couple more games because when you play Shadow of the Demon Lord, you pretty much level every game.
Yeah.
And an adventure is set to go and be complete in about 11 or so sessions. So things are heating up and. It'll be useful to have, like, a mobile artillery chicken hut.
That
can't be bad. Yeah. And, I don't know, it's just really nice to...
That sounds like a poultry task to have accomplished.
Yeah.
I'm not even a little upset with myself for that pun.
I could have it all flaming chickens! Yes! Yes!
Like,
flaming
like Pooja,
chickens.
What is it? The Pooja the chicken from Gauntlet?
And there are stats for bombs, so I can attach bombs to the flaming chickens.
You know, yes. You laugh, but that actually happened in history. They would attach, like, flaming things to animals and send them towards the enemy, like flaming pigs and stuff.
I knew that.
Yeah, and it was a great way
to... enemy lines.
Yeah.
They've also flung bloated corpses over castle walls.
Yep, that was early germ warfare. In World War II, they had... The most horrifying one I ever heard of was they had dogs in World War II that were trained to go underneath tanks to get their food.
Ooh.
So they saw a tank, they went under their food. These were Russians. Goddamn Russians. And they put a backpack on the dog that had a little stick about the height of a tank tread, and whenever it hit something, it would go kaboom. So the dogs would go underneath the tanks in the battlefield, and they would go kaboom. On the vulnerable underside.
Sounds like a Russian tactic. It sounds good.
Yeah, just kill lots of puppies. Win the war. Yeah, I mean, what are we even fighting for if you're killing puppies?
Well, I mean, World War II, to be fair, they didn't care about their humans either. It's like, literally, just keep going. I know you don't have a gun. Just grab one off a corpse. He'll be around.
Yeah. Was it like one gun for every three people or something?
Yeah, it was about that.
And everyone else had extra clips because when the guy died, they just shove it in.
In that context, bomb puppies is not the worst thing in the
world. Yeah, I know, right? And you know, Holocaust. Great. Now we've gone all the way, we've looped all the way around. We've gotten, what's it called? Is it Poe's Law?
One of those. Yeah. One of those. What's your character for the week?
Have I talked about Thrice yet?
No, I don't think so.
So, this is something I learned from. So, Thrice was a GM PC in that big game I played for a long time, that 12-person game called The Dead Men. Thrice was a GM PC, and this is what I learned that, we talked a bit about it before, I think, that people latch onto NPCs really well. And Thrice was, at one point, I gave them NPCs to control. They were literally first-level commoners. My dog is going out. Go get her. Yeah, I know. Sorry, my corgi's being annoying here.
Okay, I have a French bulldog. I get it.
He's barking at something I can't even hear, so... we're just being a jerk. Probably just being a jerk. Anyway, so he, they were leading a military force to this island of lizard folk who decided that they were trying to invade, and everyone got to pick how they went in. They paired up, and each of them got a squad of people. Now, the players being players said, we should train the NPCs. Now, these are all first-level commoners. And they had identical equipment. And the NPC jokingly said, because they were supposed to be really unintelligent, can we just switch around our weapons? And the player was like, yeah, go do it. And, like, one guy ran in with two shields. One guy ran in with, I think he just wanted to bare-knuckle fight. Because everyone had a sword and a shield. So Thrice gets his nickname. I forget what his real name was. But Thrice got his nickname because he went into battle with three swords. and he did not use his swords like an intelligent human being. He had like a -2 intelligence modifier or something. So he walked up to the lizard folk, 5 feet away, adjacent, like literally, took his sword and threw it, provoking an attack of opportunity. Three times, Thrice. And every time he scored a critical hit and confirmed it. He killed more players than the players.
That's fantastic.
At the end of that session, I'm like, guys, you can level up one of these NPCs. They were like high level. Right. They were like 12. And they're like, that guy Thrice. We're gonna level him up. And they proceeded every time they won to be able to level one person up. And they were down and down and down. And by the end of it, Thrice was like a 5th level fighter or something. And Thrice proceeded to just keep getting new swords. They were not like, he got a returning sword eventually. But he would just throw his swords 3 at a time while dual wielding the most inopportune way possible, and things would just happen. Like, he had a way that he did something and it critically hit a vampire who we fluffed it as he threw it at it and the guy ducked in his head on the altar, and then the players pointed out, isn't that the altar that was supposed to kill him? And we were like, I'm like, oh my god, yes it was, I hate you guys so much right now. And he like slayed a vampire and he just did ridiculous things, and he was a GMPC. He was played like a big farm boy. He was just like the most egotistical guy in the world, and the party loved him. And they would throw him into fights. And because they were fighting like time dragons and stuff by the end of it. And at the end, they got a wish. They saved like a deity. This was like they were like 19th level or something by the end of it. Kirk, do not lick the outlet, please. My dog is back here. I think you can see him right there licking an outlet. Come here, Kirk. Come here, good boy. Yes. So by the end of it, he became the deity of luck.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
In a follow-up campaign, he was a deity you could pray to, and players did.
Awesome.
So yes, what you learn is, let the players do what they want. They'll write your stories for you.
Oh man, some of the ideas players come up with is way better than what I had in mind.
Oh yeah, especially when they're like, man, I hope they don't have this, and you're like, they totally have that.
Yeah, I've done that more than a few times.
man, if only it worked this way. And you're like, it suddenly does work that way. I planned it all along. Well, hi, Kurt.
Yes,
you want to say hi?
Yes. This thing is now the plan. Yes.
Yep.
That's why I like to do sandboxes and then just have like a giant roster of things to pull from. Because it's like, okay, well, I guess now that you have uncovered the secret plot of the tavern owner and his salubrious murder of the mayor's wife, he's a seventh level rogue. Yeah.
We had a time when people went to the northern. It was a game I played at before I even played D&D. It was a homebrew thing we made. And we were middle of the night, probably 3 or 4 a.m. or something. And the players had been playing for like 12 hours straight. And I had to like invent areas on the fly. And I was just like, yeah, you're in the north. And the guy goes, yeah, I'll be 20 clams, you see? And the player goes, so Abdel was not very bright. I mean, he was very academically bright, just not really street smart, not very wise. There we go. Goes, well, we don't have any clams. And I'm like, you know what? No, it's the currency up here. Clams. And they thus offered begin a side quest for Abdel's character to claim clams by mining things while the players were doing other things that were not related to his character. Because he decided that he wanted to wear plate mail with nothing underneath it. And he went to the freezing, frigid north and needed to buy clothing. And he misunderstood when I said 5 clams. He thought I said 50 clams for some reason and worked for like 4 weeks for like clams. It was absurd and wonderful, and it took an hour out of the game. And I was just like, good job, Abdel. You wrote your own plot.
Yay!
Woo! So, I think next on the list here, if we're ready to move on, is your favorite project you're working on.
Ooh. Oh, man. I just finished a bunch of projects because PaizoCon is coming up in, like, next week.
I hear, and I'm sad I won't be able to attend.
I had to finish a couple of Rush projects for some people, so those are off my plate, but now it's, like, on to the next project. So
always.
I just finished Aetheric Heroes for Encounter Table Publishing and Legendary Games, which is basically the iconics for the Aetheric campaign setting, which I also laid out. And I just finished A Feast of Flavor for Legendary Games, which is in their Legendary Beginnings line. So.
Mm-hmm.
And that's written by Rachel Ventura, and I just finished that up. And next on my plate is going to be the Cthulhu Mythos. Book from Peterson Games, written by Sandy Peterson. So that's next in my layout to-do list.
Let's say, I think layout takes up more time than I want, ever.
How big is it? How big are you figuring?
Well, I have no idea yet. Probably at least the size of a hardcover book. So it's about 300 pages. Yeah.
Biggin.
The Aetheric campaign setting was 580 pages, which is by far the biggest thing I ever laid out. So,
I don't know. Never break 580. That's a ton.
Let's say, I think Necropunk was. I know Gonzo 2 was like 4. It was 420, I remember. I don't smoke, but like everyone's like, 420. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but still. And that one literally had 20 pieces of art per page.
Yeah, the more art assets, whenever you go to print, it's just...
Oh no, that was not the print version, dude. That was the, hey guys, look how many art assets we have. One.
Yeah.
It was a Kickstarter, so I had fun with that. I had this guy who, he was literally like, yeah, take all these art assets, I don't care. I'm like, cool. And,
really?
Well, I'd worked with him in a different community for a game-making community, and I was just like, hey man... Mm-hmm. You released it to the game community. Are you cool with me using it for printing? And he was like, yeah, sure, whatever. Just credit me. Like, 3,200 art assets lining up. All right.
Got it. Done.
Yup.
Yeah.
And I've used them for... Kirk, get off. Sorry. We have... My wife has a stuffed corgi. Whenever our dog annoys her, she hides it. She hugs it and she's like, ha. And my dog found it, and he's very grumpy at it because it gets pets, not him.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
Dog jealousy.
So, Mike, what are you working on?
Well, I've been out of town. I was supposed to convert Hypercore Mutes Masterminds when I was on the plane, but the space for that was not available.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, now it's Spokes of Exalted Darkness, which launches next week. So I gotta do a little bit more polishing for the PDFs and the Kickstarter page. And then I'm halfway through the playtest for the adventure.
Yeah,
the first playtest went over bananas. It opens up with like a dream sequence where the the city that you're all in, because like everybody knows one another because they all have some affiliation with the school, and they've been sort of placed subtly as agents by this mad scientist for this specific task of killing the Golden Twins, which is the name of the adventure. And it opens up with like demons and stuff spilling out everywhere and like havoc wrecking. So in the playtest, they just cut. I was like, so what do you guys do? Like, you know, the first guy, I forgot, it was his first D&D game. So he's like, well, I'll go and save this woman and her child. I'm like, okay, what do you do with them? He's like, well, I take them to a building and I make sure they're safe. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I went to the next guy and he's like, well, I'm going to lure as many people as I can into the school. Then I'm going to bar the doors and light it on fire. And I'm like, okay. That was more what we were looking for. Yeah.
There are two types of people.
Those that are in the school burning alive or those that are not. And the next guy was like, I steal a bunch from the shops, because I guess he didn't get it. It was a dream sequence, although I thought I was pretty clear about it. And then I'll lure people into a house with devils, and I may deal with the devils, give me power, and the devils kill them. And I'm like, all right, that's great. And then we rolled back to that first guy, and he's like, so where do I know where that mom still is? And I was like, oh, no. We just cinematized that. And I was like, okay, well, you go in there, and do you at least, like, get the kid out of the room? He's like, oh, I'll throw him in a closet. I was like, oh, my God. All right. I found the right people to play test this thing. And now they're, if I remember correctly, they are about to launch their attack. And I don't know, it should be pretty killer. That's tomorrow is the next playtest session.
Nice.
And I should have time to make changes to the PDF as necessary.
Awesome.
And no, I'm pretty stoked about it. And what Jason just posted about it earlier today, so the marketing sweep will begin imminently. Yeah. And I got a good rest, so I'm ready now. I'm ready to get back to it and all that good stuff. And then I'm excited about the job I got, but I can't
talk
about it.
Well, tell us when you can talk about it. How's that?
Yeah, it'll be a couple months, but I'll tell you guys all about it. It's cool. What we're planning is very, very cool, and will apply to not just us tabletop gamers, but all types of hobby gamers. Wink, wink.
Nudge, nudge. Say no more.
Say no more. Well, Scott, Rift Riders? Tell us about some Rift Riders.
Yeah, so I know I mentioned it before, but this is one of those projects that started out as like, hey guys, we got like five characters in the Mutant Masterminds thing. It's pretty cool, you know what I mean? And now it's 118 pages long.
Yep, that's how it is.
And got a lot of playtesting, a lot of fun, some people from the community.
Quick question, actually. I'm just curious about this. Because we all refer to pages and stuff. When I talk about a page of copy, I mean narrow margins, single spaced, no additional spaces in it.
So
I'm like, a page for me is like 11,000 words about? Or 1,100 words, sorry. 1,100.
Something like that. This one is not going to be that many in actual, like.
I just meant, like, in general, like, what do you guys consider, like, a full page of copy? Like, do you treat it like a page of script? Which actually has, you know, maybe 600 words on it,
you know,
on what happens.
You know, it's honestly how I do it. I look at the Google Docs and I go, how many pages is it?
So it's just like you use the default Google Docs settings?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. What about you, Liz? Do you have any preference for how you do your copy whenever you're, like, how you count your pages?
I don't. Everything I've always done has always been on a per word basis. So that's generally what I go with.
Yeah, whenever you're technically describe things as word count rather than pages, but I just happen to know it's 118 off the top of my head. So it was
hours ago. Like I said, it was just that's something that's been occurring to me lately. Like, what is a page to me is not necessarily a page to other people.
You know, I've heard people talking about a standard like word count for a page, and I don't remember what it was, but it was
800.
Let's say
800 with no image, assuming that you're using, 0.5 bleed and margins.
Let's say I heard like 1,000-ish, so that sounds about right.
It depends on what you're doing with the text.
Yeah.
Like, you can mess with the kerning, and if you're using, I think Paizo uses size 10, I typically use size 11, I think. I don't know. And usually Ariel.
Yeah, I'm,
you can mess with like the font size and the baseline grid and all that other stuff. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, so it blew up. We actually got a new writer on board, which is great. This girl, Kayla Baines, she was the best woman at my wedding, and she's awesome. She's an awesome writer. She's actually a robotics major, or graduated robotics major. She's a badass chick. Cool. I love her. And she was our business manager when we very first started. And like, and I sent her a copy. I'm like, you're gonna get a kick out of this thing. And she looked. She suddenly edited 4 pages of copy in like an hour, and it was much better than I've seen in a long time. And I'm like, Kayla, dear, do you want a job? And she did, and she has so much fun. She's running a team for. So we have the main premise is there are rifts that open, cosmic rifts that open, and shove out kaiju. And these rifts tend to explode and kill people, but those who survive suffer cosmic weirdness and superpowers. They've formed into their
group.
What?
Pacific Rim, the game.
It's Pacific Rim with superheroes, is best way to think of it.
Yay!
But it's think of them more as like angels from like Evangelion, because the term kaiju is very loosely used.
Gotcha.
But you totally have stats for Godzilla already in that book, basically. Sorry, Sonic Godzilla, not because that would be too bad if it was be copyrighted if it was Godzilla. But yeah, there's stuff like there's like digital virus kaiju and stuff. It's fun. But so there are 30 characters in it right now that are statted up. Almost everyone's power level 10, so you could kind of balance them out. So anyway,
yeah, that's generally a good idea for Eminem.
Yeah, we have like 2 people at level 8 and 1 guy at 20, but he's a cosmic being.
BBG.
No, he's naive godling who oversees the universe kind of and interacts with humanity.
Well, the BBG doesn't have to always be.
And there are plot. We literally are like 30 plot hooks, and like some of them are like,
yeah.
By the way, he turns evil, and you're like, oh shit. But yeah, it's like having Dr. Manhattan on your side and being like, come on, buddy! And all of a sudden, he's just like, you bore me, and gets into some existential stuff and explodes you. But no, she wrote for me a team called Amazons, Inc. They failed on a kaiju rift and all left the Rift Riders, but they're still affiliated with them. And now they ride around the world on motorcycles as, like, the A-team with superpowers. And there's a bunch of chicks who do it, written by Kayla, and it's awesome. We have, like, demon chick, we have a girl who is a gunslinger with a chauvinistic evil cowboy spirit attached to her. And she's like a pacifistic EMT Mexican lady who's a lesbian, and the guy is like the most like fought for the South in the war and stuff. And like imagine the complications on that character.
Yeah.
We have a four-armed alien chick. We have a Catholic nun who was the cosmic rift turned her into a demon. She has some Catholic guilt there.
Yeah.
And what was the last one on Amazon's? Because there are 4 of them. Oh, a Somali pirate chick who became queen of the Somali pirates, and then got turned into a badass panther warrior. I don't know. It was crazy, but. Yeah, it's a very crazy setting, and this weekend we're releasing a Free Wars product by Ian called Sky's the Limit. We talked about that last week, and I think 2 weeks from now is Rift Rider's release, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I'm going to see how this reacts. I hope it goes over gangbusters, so we have like 5 products ready to go after that. We have like all these books where like, are we going to do these adventures, we're going to do these things, and but... We want to see how it goes over. If we're not making anything on it, I don't know how much I can afford to put money into that. You know what I mean?
I'll definitely be interested to hear how it goes because.
Yeah. I'll send you over a copy if you want.
Been waiting to do that hypercore thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing it off, but if it's a market that they want, and I know they released a couple cyberpunk books.
Yeah, they've released a bunch of stuff actually, somewhat recently, and I like their stuff.
That's what I got going on.
And we're a little, we've been up to like wee hours of the morning working on this stuff, so that's what I'm most excited about.
Alright, cool.
So yeah.
What's next?
Projects that are not yours.
Favorite new project.
I got nothing
my man,
today, so.
my Canadian doppelganger, Michael McCarthy, of Straight Path Games, which still surprised he didn't change the name of there, has released the Stealth Scale, which is meant to make being stealthy easier, mostly for the GM. But that would also increase like playtime for players. And like all of his products, it's short, it's sweet, it's cheap. So.
I always really like, liked his last one, but I also really like seeing simplifications of rules. Because a lot of players are comfortable with that, especially GMs. Some of them, not so much. You know what I mean?
No, his ethos is really cool, and it's good, and I'm glad he's doing it, because like, I don't know where he would be able to hang his hat for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the stuff I do is like focused on making big fucking print books, not tiny little, like, you know, five-page pamphlets or whatever.
And I think that's the beauty of, like, PDFs these days, is that you don't need to put, like, a whole marketing push and, like, a whole, I mean, you should, like, a whole, like, print run behind it. What's up, Liz?
Yeah, no, you just keep on releasing, like, small PDFs. That's
it's
awesome.
the Rogue Genius model.
Mm-hmm. That works great.
We never did that. And Liz, I never had to pull every single one of those tiny products. If you guys who don't know, I messed up on some of my OGL stuff at one point, so I had to pull like everything down and re-add it. And to be fair,
I remember sending that email.
Oh yeah, and I was like, oh my god, and it was like a Thursday or a Friday, and I'm like, all right, pull everything down. I'll have it up next week. And I just like, I tell you what, I worked every night for like every waking hour. And work days, I'm like, guys, keep working on your stuff. I have things to do and fix here. And they're like, can we help? I'm like, do you guys have InDesign? They're like, no. I'm like, all right, go back to work.
So just go.
Leave me alone. I'm fixing things.
Time you'd have spent packaging the files, you could have just made the changes yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Is there any new project that is not yours that you would like to prop?
I'm just coming up for air. I'm working on bunches of stuff that I've worked on, so I don't know if I can count those. So, man, I'm thinking here. All my other things I can think of are like Kickstarters I keep being advertised, but that's a different part of the show.
It is.
The upcoming Wayfinder is going to be pretty great.
Ooh, yeah, Paizo-Con's coming up, so a new Wayfinder's coming up. This isn't the Hell one, is it?
No, this one, God, what was this? I just know the cover art looks amazing, and it's going to be awesome.
Well, it's always accompanying the most recent adventure path, right? Like, no? Oh, okay, never mind. I thought it was supposed to, alright.
I guess some more stuff in there. I've written for it once or twice. Once, maybe? I gotta write more.
Yeah, I usually end up doing art or maps for Wayfinder, so.
I have so much content just, like, in the back, like, I wrote this. I don't know when I'll ever use this, you know?
I had a moment recently for Bronca, which we mentioned earlier in the show, of, like, looking through new spells, because, you know, just leveled up recently, and like, oh, that's a really cool spell! Oh, wait, I wrote that. It was kind of a cool moment. It's like, that's pretty great.
I'm still waiting for that terrifying day where I sit down to a table to play a game and somebody pulls out a book that I've written because it's going to be like, fuck me.
I had that happen online. I was running an online game at one point and someone pulled out, like, can I use this class? It's from, I'm like, yes! Yes, you can!
That's okay.
And I'm like, just don't abuse that sixth level thing. There's a way you could abuse it. Never mind.
Yeah. There's some, like, I enjoy being, I like making games. One of the reasons I like design with Pathfinder is it's easier to replicate extremely, or to in advance, make extremely difficult, tough fights that you can't quite, like, with D&D 5e, for instance, you kind of got to be on the ground and feel it out. With Pathfinder, it's way easier to just set up the ingredients and cook it, like, you know, 400 degrees, 12 minutes, it's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And, whenever, like, there's a book specifically that Ian Will put out called To Stake a Vampire that I did, and the final fight was just this, like, horrifying blood slaughter where it's this close to a TPK.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I got to write, the final four NPCs for Rap and Athox when they did the, And they actually nerfed my turnover. Yeah. I thought that made me feel good.
I wrote something for Grand Temple of Jing at one point, most of which got thrown out.
Oh, yeah.
Most of the stuff I wrote got thrown out, but...
Kashina brought in, like, everybody for Temple of Jing.
The thing is, though, I was actually backing that one, and I was, like, a backer, and I submitted some stuff for it. I was like, here's what I was trying to think, and they're like, well, we have this one over here. Do you want us to use this? I'm like, okay, here's some stats. And they're like, okay, well, we'll keep it take that into consideration. I'm like, I had the most horrifying anti-magic thing that was ever created, and they didn't put it in. I was like, you know, part of me is like, I don't want to have my name on that section being like, God damn it, Scott. God damn it.
I just did the Hero Lab conversion for Grand Temple.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I did the kobolds with the oozes that they let around with sticks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That was Mylar Town. That was actually a little difficult because I'm not used to writing stuff for first level and second level. Like I typically always start at like third or above. Mm-hmm. So
it's like, oh, I have to pull my adventures.
I write very few adventures. I've written a few. It's not my thing. I don't know why.
I think you need to be in the right, like, so I've written a couple adventures, but I like writing adventures for Mists of Akuma more than anything else. So, like, I've already got three out, and then another one, like, all the maps and art are done, and I just kind of, like, got to find time to do it, because, like, I really just feel motivated when I'm there.
So
it's not like I don't like the other things, it's just Mists of Akuma is the one that really punches that button.
See, for me, the problem was, I think, when we first started, we put out a few adventures, and... they didn't really resonate that well, and we were like, we'll put out player material, we got like this much money. We're like, we'll put out adventures, and we got like this much money. And I'm like, I kind of started going the player material direction for that reason. And it's like, we've tried every now and then to put something out and kind of test the waters with it, but we just never got the return that we did in player focused material. But I think that's because you have like five players at a table, six players at a table, and one GM, you know?
Right.
Well, the GMs are the ones who, overwhelmingly, it's like one in, or the shit. The numbers are the GMs buy more material.
Oh, yeah, no,
like
totally.
A staggering
totally
amount.
Agree with that, yeah.
So a lot of the people buying it are probably GMs that are just including in their names.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a hard metric to figure out for sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, now we're talking about Pathfinder and Starfinder news and speculation. We have two pretty juicy tidbits this week.
Yeah, so you guys want to take it away?
Yeah, Liz, why don't you tell us about, I think you probably know better than us, because I am way out of the loop.
I actually don't.
Then, Scott, tell us about Kingmaker from Alcat Games.
That's not my thing.
So it looks like there, if you are a fan of the kind of isometric style of play as popularized by such, you know, classic computer games as Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale, not sure. Owlcat Games is putting out the Pathfinder Kingmaker game, so I'm super excited about that because, for one thing, the person behind it is Chris Avalon, who did things like, you know, like Day of Torment, Icewind Dale, Knights of the Old Republic 2, Fallout in Vegas, etc., etc. And so there's a lot of some old school people in there that I'm curious to see what they're going to do with that particular setting. And location,
and you know,
it's not like Overlord, so.
So I like that. I like seeing people who do things well, getting to do that same thing again. You know what I mean? Like like those people definitely. That resume is something you go, oh, you want to make a Kingmaker game? Yeah, I'll buy that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it's the same thing that happened when you know Pillars of Eternity came out and the you know Torment, Tides of Numenera. It's like, oh, these people are. Well familiar with the style of game and know how to make it really sing. So it's like, yes, I'm throwing my cash at this, bringing it nothing else.
You know, I actually...
So I'm
glad they picked Kingmaker because I would have less interest if it wasn't, because like having the building your own territory and land aspect is really cool, and I don't recall seeing that done very well in any previous medieval RPG.
Right.
Was it Bloodlines?
I don't know if that's going to be the focus of the game, though.
Oh, it's definitely one of them. No, it's their fourth like line, so it's definitely going to be a big deal. Which is, yes.
I'm excited.
What was that, Liz?
I was like, I'm excited to see more about it. I'm assuming we're going to hear more about it at PaizoCon, perhaps
hopefully.
Even a panel or similar.
Oh, they probably have a demo up. I remember I got to play the Pathfinder MMO over at PyCon.
Oh.
And set it up right near
the... I don't know if
they did. Oh. They definitely have something, because there's screenshots that look like they got something.
Yeah, but whether or not it's going to be ready in a week and a half, it doesn't matter entirely.
Yeah, it might be like a 2-minute demo, you know, just something to keep interest. Yeah, that'll definitely be very, very cool.
So, Mike, you said some comment, and you're like, there's nothing, there hasn't been something like that, but there is. Do you remember 3.5's Birthright?
Oh, yeah!
Yeah.
They had a video game for Birthright?
No. I thought you were saying books.
No, I'm talking about specifically
computer. No, I don't. I mean, not unless you get into like the simulation ones, like, you know, Sims of Solar Empire.
That's what I'm saying. I don't want it to be like The Sims. That is very good for me. Like,
no,
don't make
that.
It Sim City Pathfinder. Please don't do that.
No, I was
just give me like Sim City Pathfinder Lite.
Mike, not Sim City. Sins of a Solar Empire. But that's much more like management stuff, kind of like. Another game like Hearts of Iron, but like in space. I don't know. It didn't have like the Icewind Dale elements to it. It was just kind of like, what was it? One of the Dynasty, the Empire series offshoots of the Dynasty Warriors game do that pretty well, but that's hack and slash. But it's also like building empires, and I thought it was cool.
I don't know. I was never into the narrative for any of the Dynasty Warriors games. That's not what you're there for, man.
Well,
oh, no. Nah.
So here's the thing. I actually have a story for this. I went to China one year for like 2.5 weeks with a bunch of natives, and we went to Liu Bei's tomb. And I was like, oh, I know all about this. And they're like, no, you don't, stupid American. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Peng Tong. Oh my God, that's when they stole the red hair. Oh my God, and the people are just like, how does stupid American know this stuff? And I'm like, oh my God, can you translate that to us? And they're like, oh my God, really? Why are you asking us now? But they were like really excited that I knew too. They were like, how did you do that? Like I went and I read the Romance of the Three Kingdoms. I thought it was a great book. And they're like, that's what made me write Dragon Tiger Ox at one point. I love that stuff.
Well, yeah. I know. I hope that the way they do it is like, do you guys have played any of the Dawn of War games for Warhammer? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like the way they did character leveling in that?
Yep.
I tried to, but it kept crashing my system.
Oh, that sucks. They're really good.
They're fun, yeah.
I know.
God, there's another game I can, and whenever I bring it up, no one can remember what it is. It's an RTS that predated that by a while. It was like StarCraft era, like Brood Wars era, I think. And you had a character that you leveled up the entire way, like you had to choose a new class every level, kind of. It's really interesting. I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah, if they could do that the way they did character leveling in the Dawn of War games, but for it to be settlements and to give me a little map to play around with, like, that would be amazing. Well, move on. Yeah, what's the other thing we got?
Starfinder.
Yes, Ian World got a look at Castrovel, which I think was the zombie planet, right?
No, Castrovel is the red planet. Castrovel is Venus, I think.
Oh, the second planet from the sun in the Pact world. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's got to do with the energy chainsword. Nice touch. But you get some awesome illustrations and insights over at Ian World. They got an exclusive. It's very pretty.
You're thinking of Eox is the dead planet.
Yes, that's the other one, because I was on vacation, so I was like looking at articles sporadically, but yeah. There's a dead planet of zombies somewhere out there, and then also this place with they got antennas, which are very intriguing.
Yeah, the Lashunta, yeah.
Yeah. Any other Starfinder-y stuff?
No, I think I'm good.
I've actually avoided spoilers like for all of it, even when I was working there. So it's like I just want to like have that joy of seeing it come out, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait for Free RPG Day and getting my hands on some rules, because I didn't make it into the playtest. So, and I have stuff planned for Starfinder. So,
yeah, some people have been asking us about on our Facebook a bunch about Necropunk in its relation to Starfinder. And we were like,
oh, that'd be fun.
And we're like, I'm like, the reason we haven't put anything out for a while is because we saw our Starfinder come up and we're like, let's see what they do with it first, and we might end up converting Necropunk to Starfinder, mm-hmm. which would be a lot of fun. We have to add like the phase mechanic and stuff, but plus I'd love to get back into writing for that stuff. That's just so much fun.
Yeah. I guess, so what can I say about it? Okay, I can say, so Varanthea, we have a plan, and our plan is to make it about the gods, because specifically Paizo's divorce the gods for, I assume, adventure path used later. But all our gods in Varanthea will help like design the ships they send people out in. So they'll each be like based on, I don't know. I'm looking forward to how much fun we have with them, because the deities in Varanthea are the one thing people always talk about. So like, yeah, Madelondo and his despicableness, like what the hell his ship is really going to do. It'll probably do something like eat space around it. I don't know. Something vile. That'll be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a hypercore thing planned. That's going to be an adventure path, but I really shouldn't talk about that one yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That'll be fun. Because I will say that we got Thurston on board for part of it, so that'll be definitely good.
We got
yes.
Oh, Thurston.
We
were really sad when he didn't make it into the original Kickstarter, because he was going to do like Cthulhu Greenland, like Cyberpunk Cthulhu Greenland, and I was like, yes. But yeah, we just didn't get the money.
I know we have some classes and races set up, waiting in the wings to see how they're gonna come out.
Yeah, there's a lot of speculation, but here's what I think it's gonna really cringe on, like hinge on rather. It could go either way, right?
Yeah.
Is spaceship combat, because if spaceship combat is too fun, you're not gonna want to get out of the spaceship, and it's not gonna be an adventure game so much as it's gonna be, you know, Space Fighter.
It's the old like MechWarrior RPG flaw of where you were fantastic in your mech, but man, the second you got out of your mech, you were just like, I am a worthless character.
Yep.
So, I mean, the Paizo's really, really good. If anybody's going to do it right, it's going to be them. So I think it's going to go over gangbusters, mm-hmm. but it's good to remain speculative at it.
We did a Magic Punk game at one point and had, the problem was every time you got on a ship, a big, giant, destructive, magical ship, why wouldn't you nuke it from orbit? You know?
Yeah.
We did have ships...
Come down here and fight me!
Wait, what level spell can I cast with this ship's core? Oh, 9. Okay. Well, bye. How many...
I've got 20,000 gold sitting around. Somebody, I know you do. I know you got it. Yeah. Alright.
So, yeah.
And then D&D 5e, I have heard Bunkus. I know there's some new initiative system that came out or something like that. I haven't gotten to see it yet, so I don't want to talk about it because I don't want to say something stupid.
Last week we talked about the racial, the subclasses again. Nothing out there that made me go, yay, but wasn't bad.
I know, it looks like WotC's kind of like... decided, because I guess there's going to be a lot of Starfinder talk this summer, and what are we expecting to hear about anything from D&D 5e this summer at all?
Nothing that like is on my radar that's just like, and this is what we're throwing up in opposition
exactly.
to it.
So
yeah.
It's kind of like WotC's like, you know what, we're not going to have the market share of attention right now anyway, so why bother? Which is good. Get out of Paizo's way. Let's watch you guys bungle this all over again. I've been waiting for Paizo to get back on top. Maybe this is the, I don't know. Definitely, I think it's a mistake on WotC's part, man. They could say, we're releasing the dog shit bag adventures, and everyone would lose their fucking minds.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wait, no, sorry. The nostalgic dog shit bag.
Oh, the nostalgic, yeah. The Seiko dog shit bag adventure, yeah.
Yeah, we're no, now all I have to do is release the Seiko conversion rules for armor.
Yeah, exactly.
I know two people up in a... at some of my tables, you would be like,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. We'll see. I hope that they are. Maybe they're being gracious about it, and they know that overall, like I think so. There's two major decision forces with WotC, and one of them is Subversive and Quiet, and that's the actual like D&D design team, and then the Loud of like dumbasses are Hasbro. So like. I don't know. I create all these like little narratives in my head for like how and why they're doing about these things. Like, what did they tell Hasbro that, like, this is the result. Yeah. So maybe this is, yeah, I don't know.
I think a lot of people aren't aware of the fact of actually how many the friendships that actually exist between Kaizo and the Cinder Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been said before that the RPG industry is very incestuous, and it's very true.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody knows everybody, and it's the whole rising tide lifts all boats thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, maybe Mike Merles and Chris Perkins are intentionally being like, oh, we just don't have anything ready to show yet, guys, but after September, when Starfinders come out for a month already, we'll be announcing blah.
Well, yeah. When people,
and it could be just like the people that are you know, subcontracted worked out, they just don't have an open right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, that too, right? It could be much further reaching, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the way the book solicitation cycle works is now like 6 months in advance as opposed to 6. So. And that was a change that was coming through just as I was leaving last year. So I'm curious to see how much further out planning is going for Big Book projects.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get somebody in the know on it at some point and get them to tell us. Other RPG news. Any submissions are all in. Voting has not started yet. I don't think voting starts until, what, June or July or something?
Something like that.
I think it's July.
July. I'm excited. I got 3 things in the ring.
I'm sad that the Aethera campaign setting didn't get in for printed books.
It didn't?
For digital.
That's sad.
Well, no, it's that the thing was weird.
Oh.
And
yeah, we
like, I was, oh yeah, I was going to talk about this. So for sure we knew HyperCore was going in because we were just going to submit that as a digital product. But then Mists of Aguma had all those printing issues, and I got dragged behind on some other projects. So 29 and Wasteland came out a little bit late, even though I released it 2 months earlier than I promised in the Kickstarter, but I wanted to do it 3 months earlier, you know. And so I had to send Mists of Aguma directly from the printer to the judges.
Oh dear.
So like, yeah, I was really worried because there's very specific text you need to include. Cause some of these people live in like India. And they don't want to have to pay duties on the books they're getting,
yeah.
Right? They're for promotional purposes only. So I talked to DriveThruRPG, and the one guy was like, you're going to have to get the books and ship them from your house. I was like, fuck, because I didn't have the time to get them.
Yeah,
I would have
missed
the submission date. And the other person was like, well, you know what? I've had to send stuff to hotels before. You could just try putting the really important stuff in the name section of the mailing address. So I managed to fit, like, one of those, what do you call the lines that are bigger than an I, but they go like the entire text field? They're on the right of your keyboard. I'm an idiot.
Oh,
but I don't know.
Strokes. Not strokes.
They're strokes? Yeah.
It's stroke? I don't remember. It looks like it's double. It's below the backspace, right?
Yeah.
That's the pipe symbol? The one that's directly up straight and down?
Yes, the pipe symbol, yes. So I used that, and then it was like, promo only, customs $1. And I managed to squeeze that into every single one. And I guess
nice.
They made it to their destinations because Mists of Aguma is on there and 29 and Wasteland's on there. So, yeah. And I think we are definitely in the running for the cover art award because last year, Claudio Posis won the illustration, like the judge's favorite illustration award, and he did the cover for Mists of Aguma. So,
nice.
Although I won't be there to get the award because I'm not going to Gen Con, but I've already got Savannah.
I am going to Gen Con. I'm one of the industry insiders this year.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you.
Did the hotel deal make it affordable, or?
Hotels are always a question in the ass for Gen Con, so.
They are insane.
Any deal I can get, I will send.
Oh, I thought they offered, like, a special block for the insiders or something.
They do.
Oh, okay.
But I have to pay for it.
Yeah. I just didn't know if the discount made it, like, you know, feasible or not.
Well, again, going as working for Paizo, I haven't had to pay for a hotel in a year. So.
Yeah.
And even when I was volunteering for them, I didn't have to pay for a hotel room. So.
That's it. Mike Pence does live in his car at Gen Con, in his van.
Yeah. I've, again, if you like privacy and don't like to pay a month's rent for one night in a hotel room, I strongly recommend. Sting.
I'm going to point out the fact that as a single woman, that is a terrible idea.
Yeah, sounds right. I mean, as a single guy, it's a bad idea too, but you know.
Dude, the sheriff's headquarters was in view of me the entire time.
Also, I'm almost 40, so that sounds like an also terrible idea.
Yep.
Well, I wasn't, okay, to be fair, I wasn't in a car. I was in a van on a mattress because I took the seats in the back out. So, I mean, like, I had planned
this
whole thing. The only thing I didn't have was, like, a shower, which next time I think I'm just going to do because I didn't see a single soul in the parking lot at any point, except for the cops that pulled up once or twice. Because I guess that's where their equipment shed is, too. And there's a helicopter thing. Like, honest to God, I couldn't have had a better place to sleep. But, yeah. If you're doing Gen Con on a budget, send me an email. I have lots of advice.
I do, too. It's called volunteering for a company that offers room space.
That is also an option.
Industry Insider has some cash set aside.
Well, do we have any other media of interest to talk about, except for Guardians of the Galaxy, which we're not going to do because I'm spoiled for Liz?
Last week, we talked about King Arthur Legend of the Sword. I got a preview of that.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
And it's the best D&D movie ever.
Oh, yeah?
If we want to talk about, like... Steven Universe, I'm all about that.
Oh my god, yes. You know what's funny? I actually literally, like, last weekend caught up.
Oh, good.
I hadn't caught up until, like, then, and now my wife's watching it, too. So, I caught up in the last, like, was, like, 10 episodes I'd missed, and then my wife is going through, too, and I'm rewatching, and I'm like, and then there's the part with the thing, and then they had the feels!
And so many feels! Oh my god, why? Yeah, no. Steven. Damn it.
So Steven Universe has upped its game recently.
I would say it always had a good game, man. Come on.
Yeah. It's always been a good game.
Well, for me, it's been Samurai Jack.
So I am like 3 episodes behind, I think, or something, and I'm really sad about that.
The last episode's fucking excellent.
Don't even tell me, dude.
It's very
really
good.
I'm upset.
And it was funny. Like we dropped the car off in my parents' house, you know, the other week, so we get dropped to the airport and everything. And I'm just sitting there talking to my dad, and he's like, "Have you seen the new Samurai Jacks?" I was like, "Oh yeah, they're really good." He's like, "They're really dark." Like, he was really surprised. I was like, "Well, the people who watched it are older, Dad." And he's like, "Yeah, I kind of knew, but like, it's way darker than I thought they were going to do it." I was like, "Well, it's good."
Well, welcome to modern comics, a modern cartoon, Dad.
Oh, welcome to modern comics too. So actually, if you guys follow me at all on Facebook, I'm really into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and there's no spoilers here, but the last freaking, like, 4 episodes, or 6 episodes or something, the last, like, arc, the mm-hmm. framework arc, was just so painfully bad. And then
heard something about MODOK?
No?
No MODOK?
I don't think so.
Was that just a joke that somebody was making, because everything was so bad?
I didn't notice it. But anyway,
you'd have to notice it.
I would say, I think I would notice it. But but the final episode of the season... just like, you could tell they were like, all right, so we're going to blow we've been saving this. We're blowing a huge percentage of our special effects budget on this because this character's doing all this crazy shit. And then we have, you know, Daisy blowing shit up. Then we have, like, teleportations everywhere. And we have character deaths and you know, romantic subplots resolving and just brutal deaths on screen right and left. And then this happens and this. And I'm just like, you've been shitty for 6 episodes!
Just 6 episodes, Scott?
You know what? I have a lot of leeway for that show. The Ghost Rider stuff was really cool, and then everything after that for the season was just like a train wreck. But this episode almost makes up for, like, the majority of the season just being a shit show.
I found out something cool. What's the name? Agent Ling? Is that the combat specialist lady's name in the show?
Agent May.
Yeah, Agent May. She grew up in Pittsburgh. Her family owns the Chinatown Inn downtown.
That's cool. She was also
Which is actually kind of a shitty restaurant, but yeah, I found that out too. Yeah. I just didn't know she was like a Mount Lebo local.
That's cool.
So one of the things I want to do is I want to sit down and watch all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe in chronological order.
Oh my god.
Ooh, that's gonna take you a couple of days, Liz.
So I have a home office. I have a studio space, and I have a TV mounted on the wall with a Chromecast that I can watch from my computer.
How far back do you want to go?
Yes.
So chronological to, like, release date, or chronological to in-universe?
In-universe.
So you're starting with, like, the first
Captain America in 1970.
And then you're going to Agent Carter?
Yeah.
Well, here, how do you count them, like, movies with extensive flashbacks, like,
The Daredevil TV show before the Netflix show.
Yeah.
The Daredevil made-for-TV movie, the Hulk made-for-TV movie with Thor.
Let's say those don't count as...
That's what I was saying. How far back do you want to go? Because, like, there are some
She said MCU.
There was a Doctor Strange TV movie in the 78, I think.
Well, no, here, it wasn't Doctor Strange. It was a knockout. They had the rights to Doctor Strange until they...
You guys remember the Captain America movie from, like, what was it?
Yeah,
where the shield is the bicycle, the motorbike shield is his arm shield shield?
No, that's a Sentai one. She's talking about the one from the 80s where Captain America loves to steal people's cars.
Yeah.
And being a,
well, I know that there were three made-for-TV Captain America movies before he made it to the actual silver screen. Mm. And in one of them, he totally pulls his arm shield off of, it's the windshield of his motorbike.
Yeah, no.
I remember screaming in rage when it happened.
No, but I remember a really bad Red Skull.
Oh, yes.
But yeah,
doing the whole
chronological thing would be very, very intense. I don't think I could do it. I like watching in release order here.
Could either, man. I don't know if I could sit through another Ben Affleck Daredevil movie.
That's not MCU though. That wouldn't count.
Yeah.
Oh, because it was from Fox.
Yeah. Well, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is defined as, like, there are currently 15 films in it. Several shows.
It starts with Iron Man.
Oh, so you're talking about some classification they made recently, not the actual Marvel properties in film.
Correct. So there's actually something called the Marvel Cinematic Universe that they have defined as this thing that movies all relate to each other, that tentpole franchise thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, in chronological order, I don't know. That's a lot of Agent Carter to sit through.
I'm okay with that.
All those pieces are generally pretty good.
I liked parts of Agent Carter. Like, parts of it were just like, yes, go get her! And then they're like, you had nothing to write, did you? You have a filler episode. Like, the stuff with the Howling Commandos was really cool. Like, that bit. Like, I was sitting on the edge of my seat, and then there's, like, some of the not Cloak and Dagger, apparently, stuff going on. That was a little painful at times.
So, it's like, I have a friend who put together a machete order for me for Babylon 5.
Ooh.
So I'm wondering if there's like a machete order for like TV series. Or like Agent Carter or whatever.
I'll tell you right now, Agent Carter doesn't go most... It has a really cool premise, and then kind of goes in circles. It's like, it plays a lot with the... So this is how women were treated back then. And you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of gets resolution at one point. And then they start the second season and it just goes right back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, like, moving on from their premise, they kind of are like, so we did all this, and then we reset the status quo, and then we reset the status quo, and then so they keep doing that a lot, and I'm like, look, if you had moved on...
Just like real life?
Yeah, I know. But I'm saying, like, if they had advanced that to a bigger stage, you know what I mean? Like, if it went from, all right, within this little office politics, you had these guys who... now realize that you're at least worth, you know, you're not the secretary. If then that moved up to like another level, even it's like, all right, now we're actually launching S.H.I.E.L.D., let's go ahead and, oh, you can't, but you're a woman, we can't have you as a space S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, even if they did something like that, it would be interesting. But they really just kind of spun their wheels for two seasons, and I understand why they got canceled.
Right.
I can't believe somebody who's a fan of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is saying this shit about Agent Carter. That show was awesome.
I love Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when it's good, because, like, when they're hunting down C-list Marvel villains, that's, like, my favorite thing in the world.
Alright.
We're, like, Deadlock and stuff. Like, that's so much fun.
I was way into Agent Carter. I can't believe they canceled it. I was like, damn it, why do you have to hate women, you fucking idiots?
Just give us a good show with a female lead. God damn it.
Is it so much for just one that's not a teenager? Is it that? Am I really asking for that much?
Apparently you are.
Yeah, apparently there's yes. The answer is yes.
Well, Xena got to go on a long-ass time, so maybe
remember Xena was
Carter in a bodice and what we set.
Let's say, remember that Xena was a spin-off.
Yeah.
From Kevin Sorbo's Hercules. So that means that, like, you didn't really, it wasn't really, like, its own thing, which is
side
like...
Side note, as a dude who looks like a criminal, I don't know why Autolycus didn't get his own spinoff. He should have. Bruce Campbell should have had at least two seasons of just Autolycus, right? Just rolling around being the King of Thieves. He was the best character in all those shows. Like,
Honestly, I'd be cool with, like, a Gabrielle spinoff.
Oh, yeah, Gabrielle was cool, too. Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys see Burn Notice?
Or just, like, what was the name of Hercules' lackey dude? Like, one with him and Gabrielle, and that's the series. Like, that could have been cool, too.
Did you guys see Burn Notice?
Sidus, yeah.
Because in Burn Notice, Bruce Campbell gets a whole movie dedicated to his character, which is awesome.
Which one?
Sam Axel.
Sam Axel?
He's literally just, like, a special ops guy, and he's always wise. He's Bruce Campbell.
Bruce Campbell.
And they have, like, the origin of, like, Sam Axel or whatever, and he's just, like, and it's just, it's, like, an hour, like, where they couldn't get the main actor or something, so he's, like, TV movie time, and he's just, like, yes! And this got to do a whole, whole mini TV movie of just him being him in his character, and it was great. And he calls everyone bitchy, you know, bitchy little assholes all the time. It's great.
Sam Axe. Oh, from Burn Notice. Oh,
yeah.
I was saying.
So, yeah, on Burn Notice, he got his own little thing. So, kind of reining us in. Let's talk about some Kickstarters.
Woo! I'm going to say mine first because it's ending sooner. It ends in a couple hours.
Go for it.
Eclipse Phase, second edition.
Ooh, pretty.
Yeah. I know the guy works on it, and it looks amazing. Done off art, and it also looks amazing.
Yeah, Eclipse Phase is very cool, very, very future sci-fi stuff. They draw a lot of inspiration from Richard K. Morgan and the whole sleeving thing, which is very, very neat.
Also, that whole, like,
Richard K. Morgan and the whole sleeving thing. And their first book was gorgeous. I'm sure this will be just as gorgeous.
If you look at the art there, you can see it's gorgeous. It's going to be downright.
Oh, the whole execution was very, 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 very elegant.
One of the things I said is part of the stretch goals, if I remember correctly on this, is they're planning to have, like, an open wiki.
An open
what? For the world. As part of the backer level. Where is it?
There's an open playtest. You can download it right now, even if you're not a backer.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, but at the unlocked backer level, there is an official Eclipse Phase wiki, so...
Oh, like an official movie?
Official wiki site.
Okay. Wiki. Oh, I thought you were saying movie. I'm sorry, wiki. Gotcha.
Yeah. Those three words don't sound anything alike. but yeah.
It looks like they're going to hit their last stretch goal, too.
Yep. I'm excited. I have another Kickstarter, but it is, like, super nerdy for artist nerdy kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
there is one called The Reckless Deck. They've already closed, but they're up on BackerKit. And it's basically always solving the problem of, I don't know what I want to draw. It's basically a deck of cards with, like, ideas. And you, like, mix and match cards together, and it's lovely and brilliant.
Cool. What else we got here? Legendary Showdown.
So, I was looking at this the other day. It's an expandable
presidential book. Edition.
Exactly.
Nice.
It's just murdering its presidents, killing each other. I'll pull it up on the screen.
I like how they have Obama doing what? I guess that one's Tai Chi, right?
Something like that.
The way he's got his hands, it says Tai Chi, which is a kind of sort of kung fu.
So yeah, I like that. It just looks completely absurd, and I was just like, I would totally 100% buy this game and play it, regardless of how good it is.
No, it looks very, very cool.
Like, they have, like, Trump... Like, they have, like, bear arms. So you have the right to bear arms, and they're just, like, actual...
All the artwork looks like it's in the Penny Arcade style.
Oh, very much so.
I can describe it. Yeah.
I am also...
Which is appealing. I really like Gabe's style of art.
Well, that's cool. They have an Influential Woman expansion.
And how long does this one have left? It just started, and they're already...
Yeah.
About 30,000 to 75,000 gold. They'll definitely be getting
that. Yeah, I think they're going to hit that tomorrow.
Yeah. That's cool. What else we got?
Last one is Sentinels of Earth Prime. If you guys... We were talking about Mutants and Masterminds earlier. This is straight up Green Ronin publishing a card game for their setting.
No, Sentinels of the Multiverse isn't there.
Sorry.
No, I get it. They're the guys making the card game. I got it.
They're making the card game, not the Sentinels of Earth Prime. Well, they are. The card game called that. Sorry.
Right. Okay, cool. I recognize a lot of these guys from Freedom City.
Yep. So, I don't know. It just looks really cool. They have a tutorial up. They're at $158,000 out of $40,000. And, wow, I guess this is a little bit close to that, but there's 103 minutes to go. So if you want to donate, I guess you can do it already.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll be on BackerKit. Green Ronin is always on BackerKit. And for those of you who are not familiar with Freedom City and the rest of Earth Prime, Steve Jackson and the people at Green Ronin did an amazing job of making a unique and distinctive superhero world that doesn't just feel like DC Comics or Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really quite unique and original. And I still have all my first edition Mutants Masterminds books because they are that good, and I turn to them sometimes. Like, a lot of Hypercore I designed, actually. I decided to do graphics for every single character because it looks so good when they did it in the Mutants and Masterminds books for first edition that I had to do
That's
it.
That's it. We got 30 characters in Rift Riders, and every single one of them has artwork.
Did they have their name as like a cool graphic title?
Yep, that's what. Well, so yeah. I don't want to ruin that. I have so much fun with the page layout I have. They actually, I'm not going to like spoil too much about it, but they actually have like a speech bubble. I have actually laid out for comics. They actually each one of them are saying something, and they have like the whole name above them, and like, I don't know, it's a really cool layout. They kind of look like you ever see like the old like trading cards with like the back on them? They had like the power stats and everything for like the characters.
And then like a quote from the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. So they kind of look like that. So I have to do 60 pages of that because it's each character has a 2-page, sometimes 3 page layout for each of them. So
I only did 1-word bubble, and that's for the guy who knows that he's in like a fictional universe. So it's him and he's just killed somebody with a word bubble.
Nice.
Yeah.
So,
as I mentioned earlier, Book of Exalted Darkness next week, people. Check it out. It's going to be amazing.
So, Liz.
And I have James Introcaso. I was going to just mention James Introcaso is on the core team, which is fun because I've always wanted to work with James. And
I've worked with James before, too.
Yeah, he's a good guy and he makes good stuff. Yeah. So, like, I'm looking forward to see what evil magic items he comes up with.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And now, yes, Liz, please.
Liz,
anything.
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
Oh goodness. All this chat. I'm also working on my RPG Patreon stuff.
Yeah.
I'm 2 weeks behind again. I had some rush projects that had to get out the door, so I'm catching up on that.
I meant to tell you, Liz, earlier on that I actually used your OGL creator recently, and it's awesome. Guys, go check that out.
Yeah, for everybody, that is f15.darksunstudio.com. It basically puts together the OGL for you that you are required to have if you're doing any sort of OGL-based product. This one is specifically geared towards Pathfinder, but if I get enough funding, I may also make it for 5th edition. I just have to plug the data in. So it's pretty straightforward and fun. Because with a lot of the small land of building, it's like, I don't want to spend a lot of time working on this particular thing. I will build a tool to make me do it.
Yep.
And that's basically where that idea came from.
And that's how all the best things get done. Man, we need to get this done. I'm spending too much time on this. I have to make something to fix this. Guess what?
As a wise goblin once said in World of Warcraft, time is money, friend. That's kind of how I have to, you know, juggle things. Like, yes, I can put in more time now to save me time later. So that's where that came from. Looking forward to having some time off next week, sort of time off. If I go to PyzaCon, that's my where I'm going to be at, and then of course Gen Con, I'll be there.
I am missing PyzaCon, but I might make Gen Con this year. I'm iffy on it, but certainly next year.
Yeah. They're finalizing the industry insider panels right now, so I'm not sure where I'm going to be, but I know for sure one of them is called Buyer Powers Combined. It's how to combine technology and at the game table. Make it life easier.
Liz, so that's gonna be the- I have a vague memory. Okay. You were at the, was it 2 years ago? The diversity in gaming panel?
Was
that 2 or 3 years ago?
Probably? Something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, because I just always remember that, and I took a shit ton of notes on it, and I brought it back to my team, and we changed every one of our guidelines for art, like, after that panel. So go see her panels.
Oh, good. If you are going to PyloCon, I hope you are, and you are a third-party publisher, I will be running my Starfinder and Pathfinder compatibility license panel again.
I've been to those. They're worth going to.
Basically, I walk you through the compatibility license, what it means, what you can and cannot do. Yeah. So,
you have a little packet with examples of what not to do. Very useful.
Yeah, I have Owen Casey Stevens is joining me. He is going to be the voice of experience from the publishing side of things. And I also have my compadre, Ashley Carillion. She is an accountant and does all the magical things with taxes, and she has experience in, like, specifically, like, small business tax and accounting for small businesses. So, lots of great information there. It sounds really intimidating, but you're going to be better armed with the knowledge that you're going to get at that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
it is kind of one of my pet projects that I kind of want to, like, educate people on, encourage them to publish and do the things.
Mm-hmm. I actually just had a conversation with a guy from Australia who was looking to publish some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And he had no idea what the OGL was. He just knew he had to copy something. So I spent about 20-30 minutes going over everything line by line with him, and getting him set up to maybe publish. The question I always ask them is, are you publishing this for an audience or for yourself? And he was like, I'm actually publishing this for myself. I'm like, well, you might want to just go the fan publishing route at that point, but OGL for sure, here's how you do it, you know?
Right. And I think that the biggest question I always try to open those kind of panels with is, do you want to write or do you want to publish? Because they are two totally different things.
Yep.
And it's determining, again, going back to the whole time and energy thing, it's like, where do you want to spend your time and energy doing? Do you want the day-to-day minutia of, like, uploading products and, you know, doing all the promotion, and do you want to do that, or do you just want to write an adventure? Because if it's a letter, there are a lot of publishers out there who might want your script.
Yep. So. The there's always the times when it's like, when you're, because I don't do all the writing. I do some of the writing these days. I don't do any of the editing anymore. But I do the formatting and the publisher side of things. And there's some days when I'm doing the formatting or publishing where I'm just like, I really want to be writing right now. But then but then I get to launch something and I'm like, yeah, that felt good, you know?
I've learned to divide it into blocks. So it's like, I get to write this week and then I get to lay out for 3 weeks and so on.
Yeah, for me it's more of, I have the luxury of deciding how I want to spend my time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I want to spend my time doing layout, art, or writing? And writing has fallen off that list for me. Because it's like, I'm sure I can write, but it's a lot more stressful and time-consuming for me to do it than, like, doing a piece of art or layout.
Mm-hmm.
I got that down, so. And I'm looking forward to all the cool layout projects that's coming this year, so. And it's going to be fun.
I actually had some of the sometimes layout gets a little monotonous if you have, like, the same template a lot. So with AltPath Aesthetic, I was literally like, no. I had these gorgeous pieces. I'm going to lay this out in a weird way. And when Enzyte guys got a look at it, he was like, someone had fun with this. Someone loved this. I'm like, yeah, I did. I spent twice as long as I normally did, but it came out gorgeously. Like, every page had, like, quotes at the bottom. A lot of them were, like, full page image.
Uh-huh.
And they were, like, surrealist images, because it's, like, all about aesthetic and, like, psycho-spiritual stuff. So there's this one with these floating rocks that kind of go down the right side of the page. I was able to line the text up so it kind of went down the side like that. What's that poem that's, like, done in, like, the tornado, kind of?
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
But yeah, it kind of ended up looking like that. And I had a few of them where I actually got to, like, do stuff like almost circles, and I don't know. It was crazy. I've never done that, like, abstract, like, formatting of it, but it was just so much fun to do, I couldn't avoid it.
Mm-hmm. I think my, the Ephera campaign setting, I'm going to keep coming back to that, because it was a really big book, and it was a lot of work. But it was basically given, like, a very, like, rough guideline of what it was supposed to look like, and Robert Brooks, who is the head of that project, basically said, you need to have, like, art deco elements. Here's a couple of ideas what we've used in the past, and he says, go nuts, and I did. but I think, especially for rule books, you kind of have to balance that it needs to be functional as well as aesthetically pleasing.
Form and function and have to go hand in hand.
Yeah, and that's something I did think a lot about when I was putting together a, you know, a 580-page book. It's like, it also has to be usable.
Yep.
So you can actually find things in it as well.
I had
something I think about a lot.
What, one of the things that I was thinking about was, so I had this project, I won't talk about who the publisher was, but they kind of said, when I was new, they were like, hey man, not new, but like a year or two in, they were like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I'm looking for someone to do some, you know, royalty work. I'm like, they were a bigger publisher. I'm like, I'll trust you guys and I'll do it. And it was a 300 and something page book. And I said, how do you want me to do the layout? And they were just like, eh. I'm like,
okay.
No thoughts? Nah, just standard. Okay.
None?
So I laid out 330 pages, and then they were like, I sent them a sample of like 100 pages, and they were like, actually change it entirely. I'm like, okay.
Really?
So I changed it entirely, and they're like, yeah, actually, we want to go with a smaller font size. I'm like,
this is why I charge per page rate.
And again, that's why I made the mistake of going royalty with them, and so eventually, I've all 130 pages, or 330 mm-hmm. pages of the book, and they're like, "Hey, can you do the cover?" I'm like, "I'm not an artist. I can do graphic design. I can't do that." And they're like, "Well, here's some page assets. Make something." Okay, so I put them together. That's not good. Do it again. Okay. Did it again, and to this day, that book has never come out.
Yeah, I've gotten burned by the royalty thing.
Oh yeah, I just straight up don't do it anymore. I have a thing nowadays where I'm like, look, I'm willing to work for royalties. However,
mm-hmm.
this is my price per page, or this is my, you know, layout price.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get my layout price within 6 months,
mm-hmm.
you pay me the difference. And I'm okay with that. And people have been okay with that, because that way it's nothing up front for them and they can kind of get their money and whatever. I'm just not interested in being screwed.
Yeah, there are two occasions where, after that first one, where I accepted royalty payments, and that is for Legendary Games, and also the Tome of Horrors Complete, when it came out, I did work for that, did conversion work for that, and that royalty check was real, real nice, gotta say.
Nice, nice.
I do all my stuff with royalties at this point, unless I'm working on somebody else's property. But that's because I get to keep the property. So, like, if I want to make a comic book or something, that's entirely my business.
Mm-hmm.
And most, like, you got, in order to get that deal, you gotta have. I had to get some creds under my belt before anybody was willing to do that. And now, I was really surprised because, like, I can just take a pitch over to a publisher and they're like, yeah, do it, because they know I'm gonna do it competently and. They know that I've got the whole thing under handle, but, like, yeah, you have to have a good reputation before you can start pulling shit like that.
I did,
Yeah.
It's
a day when you actually have to refuse work.
Yep.
It hurts so bad. You're like, I don't want to refuse work, but I don't have to try to work.
Internally, we do, so we have internal guys and we have freelancers, because
mm-hmm.
we started as a game and app developer.
Mm-hmm.
So our in-house team is now four. It was three for a while, but now it's four, and everyone gets an even split. If you touch the project, if you work on the project, you get an even split, and if you don't feel like you got an even split on it, or even contribution on it, you instead get a royalty rate, or sorry, a freelance rate. So there have been projects where I've worked on a lot of it, and the company gets one share too, but we do it that way internally, and none of those guys get screwed because they make more than I do.
Yeah.
because I roll most of my stuff. I roll not most of some of what I get back into the company. So they're just getting a check every time. They're like, all right, whatever. And there's some guys who have literally done like everything on a product, and I just looked it over. I'm like, I'm not going to be a dick and like take a cut from that. Oh, so they get like 75% of the money from it.
Really nice here is like when I do switch over to the full-time job, I will still get royalty checks from all my products.
Yep. Because
there's no cap on it. It's just like as long as it's for sale and somebody buys it, I get a little bit. Just
That's one thing I like is when you first start, you're like, I got $30 this month. What the hell? That's bullshit. And then like 6 years down the road, you're like, everything's giving me $30 this month, you know?
Yeah.
and you're like, hey, look, I got products and they're selling. Even if they sell like 3 a month, you're just like, that thing from like 4 years ago just sold 4 copies. All right.
This is why I always recommend to new publishers to do the just steady releases, not like a glut of them, because you get that long tail effect.
Yep. Yeah. We say we have that like that 2 month boom where like everything sells, and then it kind of trickles off. Yeah. So,
but it's like every time you release something new, is a chance for somebody else to see all of your existing stuff.
Yep. We see everything else goes up too.
Yep.
But that's why we had like for a while we were doing like every 2 week release, which was just too crazy for us. And I think we're getting closer to that now. We're at 3 weeks, I think, normally is our average release time between releases. Sometimes we'll toss in like a really, like, hey, here's a race, go buy it, please buy, okay?
And that's a really strong model, which is why Rogue Genius is so successful, right? Because they have this huge library. But my goal is to get into game stores. And at this point, I've got like 20 books now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm ready to start going around to Studio 2 and like, I'm going to send copies to ACD and Diamond, try to get them more than just my FLGS and a couple other stores. Like I want them everywhere. Mm-hmm. I want Barnes & Noble to carry 2099 Wasteland. Like,
So you're looking for a distributor, essentially.
Yep.
Yes. But if you're only doing really tiny little products, like that's never going to happen because you got to have a print presence in order to get proper distribution.
We have on our schedule. Like, go ahead.
I say that's why you end up like partnering with other people.
That is exactly why I partner with other people. Also, I hate paperwork, and that saves me a ton of paperwork.
Again, this is a question of do you want to write or do you want to publish?
Yeah.
If you're gonna be a publisher, you're gonna have to do a lot of paperwork. You get it.
I'm aware. I'm getting my MBA mostly because of all the paperwork I had to learn how to do.
Yeah. Well, there is a little wedge you can get into where you just get to create.
It's not necessarily
write or publish. It's kind of like in the middle.
One thing I like to do is...
That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
See, I'm on the other side. I like to just go ahead and be like, I like to be that person who can go ahead, like, I can write, I'm fine, I like doing my stuff, but I also like to go, you talented person, you can see off screen, you talented person over there, you're doing something really cool, let me give you money to do the thing you love, and yeah, I'll get money back, but I want to make sure you're getting money to do the thing that you love, because you're creative and awesome, the world needs to see it. And I love being that person who can, because there's a lot of people, so in my undergrad, we had this thing where, like, all these game projects were, like, these wild creative types who were just like, I have this really cool thing. I programmed it last night. Look how it works. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Where are you selling it? And they're like, I don't know. What do you do with it next? I don't know. I'm like, let me show you. And they're like, no, I'm gonna put it on a website for free. I'm like, dude, you don't have to eat ramen. You can make this every day and get some money for it. Come on, let me help you, man.
Related to this topic, I have 2 Patreons that people are welcome to back.
Yeah, definitely. Go check those out.
My RPG Patreon is, I basically release an NPC every like 5-6 days. It is patreon.com/GM Lilith. And I have an art focused one where you can see me draw a bunch of like pinups and whatever. And monkey around with traditional art media and all good stuff. That is patreon.com/Lilith. So.
What's the art one? Oh, that's the art one.
That is the art one.
Lilith is the art one, and gaming is GM Lilith.
Yep.
That's me. All right, guys. So, Mike, what do you think? Are we wrapping up today?
We're about an hour and a half, and I could talk about. Oh yeah, I should mention this. If you go to my YouTube channel, which you might be watching this on. There's 32 videos for a walkthrough of the Shire various other things from New Zealand, including spelunking and fucking onsen bath hotel, which was amazing. Yeah. And I talk about it all on my blog in a very long post. I detail every single day and hyperlink stuff and the pictures. So MikeMiler.com, you can take a trip through New Zealand with me and Stephanie.
Very cool, very cool.
Yeah, it was... I could talk about it for hours. It was so fucking cool. It convinced her to move. It was that cool. And she was really not very keen on the idea at first. So. highlight, I want to just real quick. We were on the first day driving around trying to find Dominion Road in Auckland, which is basically Chinatown, right? And we kept like going circles. We just couldn't nail it down because I refused to use my phone. I didn't want to like learn. I wanted us to learn how to navigate on our feet because once we move there, I don't want to be stuck listening to my phone. And we just pulled on the side of the road, and I asked this like 6-year-old woman, I was like, "Excuse me, ma'am, do you know where Dominion Road is?" And she's like, "Oh yeah, just head down to the light there and take a right and go down about 2 more lights. You're gonna want to take a left there. You know what? I'm just gonna get in the car and show you." And then, much to our surprise, an elderly woman just got into our car, like walking over like a lane of traffic, drove with us for a couple blocks, was like, "Oh, it's right down there on the right," and then got out of the car in the middle of like 4 lanes of traffic and walked over to the sidewalk. And we were just the whole time like, "Oh my god, like, you know, Greta," we found her name, was like, "This would be a very dangerous thing to do in America. If you're ever in America, don't do this." She's like, "Oh no, don't worry about it, nobody's gonna hurt you in New Zealand." And we were just like, "Jesus."
That's say, my wife's from New Zealand, and she was telling me that like her grandma, even though she is super ancient, is still walking everywhere.
They're very about health.
Yeah. No, she just doesn't. She has a car.
She doesn't have a car.
She just likes to walk. It's like, what you do?
Well, it's a beautiful fucking place. The whole time we were there, we were just like constantly saying, "Jesus fucking Christ, is this real?"
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was incredible. At one point, we were driving to Napier, and I realized that we were in the hills of Rohan. And I kind of like freaked out in the car. And Steph was like, "Focus on the road, Mike. I'll take pictures. Focus on the road." "This is the fucking Rohan, Stephanie. That the wargs. The wargs came over that hill." Oh.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
New Zealand is one of my places to visit, as is Iceland.
Oh, yeah. New Zealand's awesome, and you can do it pretty cheaply, too. Like, the flight is expensive. It costs, like, $1,300 to fly, but, like, you can stay at places, nice places, for, like, $60 a night or less.
I said, my wife's from there. I'm looking forward to that trip someday.
Oh, you have to do it. I cannot recommend it highly enough.
One of the cooler ones we did was, I told you earlier, we did the China trip.
Yeah.
Northern China is, I can't describe how gorgeous it is. Turquoise rivers and like mountains and peaks and just, it's gorgeous. I don't know how to describe it. It's on par with what I've seen from New Zealand too.
What got me in New Zealand was I'm like from hill country in the United States on the Rust Belt, and it's all cut from glaciers. So the hills are all very gradual and stuff. And in New Zealand, it looks like a child drew the whole thing. Like, and it's beautiful, and like I just couldn't, because I had in my head like what a hill is, and that's totally not what hills are in New Zealand, because it's all from volcanic and tectonic activity, not from glacier.
Sorry, my dog is going crazy.
Were you gonna say, Liz? I'm sorry, I cut you off again.
Oh, I was just thinking about the places I've lived and seen, and like what's on my bucket list, that kind of thing. I know at some point I'm probably gonna end up in Germany, because reasons. I still want to, like, eat my way across the Italian countryside. I was actually, because my dad was in the military, and I was actually born in Italy. And I'd like to go back just so I can actually remember it this time, because I was, like, 2 when we left. So.
Yeah.
And we lived in England for 5 years, so, you know, England, like, I'd like to visit that again. That'd be fun.
That's where my wife and I are doing our honeymoon when we finally get around to it.
Round trip flights to Japan from New Zealand are like $500.
Oh wow!
So I know. Oh yeah, there are deals you can get for about $500 round trip. Oh
yeah,
yes,
I can't go to Japan unless I take my sister. But the pact that we made, and my sister is not, you know, not 18 yet.
Try to work that into like her college graduation gift from family members, and then just like slide your ticket into it.
I like it.
I'm gonna take her around and make sure she's safe in Japan and stuff.
She's actually visiting up here in August for the first time, so I'm like, I'm making a list of like places to take her.
Seattle's awesome.
Yeah, she actually lives in Texas, so it's like I'm gonna make a list. We're gonna go to like the International District in Seattle. I'm gonna spin her around in a circle and say, "Where do you want to eat?"
Yep.
So.
All right, Mike. We will talk more about your New Zealand trip.
Walking barefoot through Hobbiton.
We'll talk more about it next week, I'm sure. Guys, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for coming on the show,
and yes,
Liz.
Thanks, Liz. Thanks for popping by.
Woohoo!
And you'll have to send us something to review for next week.
Oh, okay.
Or ask someone you've worked with. Just send us something. We'll have fun with it.
Okay, I'll do that.
All right, then.
All right, thank you, guys.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.